No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey and the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. I am joined by my co-host, Kathleen Gomez, and together we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. This week, those of us who fight for equal rights lost a hero with the passing of Nelson Mandela. President Mandela showed us that a single person can change the world forever, and that perseverance can overcome all obstacles, and that reconciliation is an important part of our struggle. He will be missed. 2 weeks ago, we started a discussion about immigration reform. Today, we continue that discussion as we attempt to start a meaningful conversation about developing a comprehensive immigration policy for America. This has been a hotly debated issue, and we hope you'll join in the discussion by calling or texting your questions or comments to us at 888-429-5471 or on Skype at BBS Radio 2. We are fortunate to have with us today an important guest with a different point of view. Last week, we talked to Gus West, the president and chairman of the board for the Hispanic Institute. Today, we have with us Yolanda Lewis. Ms. Lewis is a former IT engineer, entrepreneur, and community advocate. She is the founder of Innovative Resources and is the CEO and president of the Black Economic Council. In addition, she is the executive director of the Northern California chapter of the Elite Service Disabled Veterans Network. And since 2012, Ms. Lewis has served on the White House African American Leaders Council, providing a voice from the community on social and economic issues directly to senior administrative officials. She is a graduate of San Jose State University and UCLA Anderson School of Management Business Technical Assistance Program. Before we talk to her, let me introduce my co-host, Kathleen Gomez, who is joining us from the great state of Arizona, which is on the front line in the battle over immigration. Hi, Kathleen. As always, thanks for helping get the conversation started.
Hello, Senator, and I'm Kathleen Gomez, and welcome to Shadow Politics. Welcome, Ms. Lewis. We are honored to have you with us today, and we continue our discussion on immigration reform. Senator Brown and I have somewhat different attitudes about immigration. I live on the border, and he lives in that kind of bubble within the beltway we call Washington, D.C. And as a consequence, we tend to see things differently. And I know you're an accomplished businesswoman from California, so I'm glad you are here to share your unique perspective with us, being from California, part of, you know, Arizona, New Mexico, Texas, and California really kind of bear the brunt of what happens when policy is set in D.C. and how it really impacts us here in you know, our local rural areas and in our cities. So last week we had Gus West, who's the head of the Hispanic Institute, and we discussed the current immigration reform bill proposed by the Senate, the Border Security, Economic, and Immigration Modernization Act of 2013. I'd like to know what your opinion of this legislation is and where you think it's taking us.
Thank you for having me. The legislation has the word reform in it, but there are no reforms built into the legislation. The only thing that it does is continue the legacy that we've had of the former amnesties. What they're doing is they are allowing corporations to control the outcomes for the American citizens. They have taken away our ability to earn a living, not be dependent on the government, and they're using the excuse of immigration to depress wages and literally bring slavery back. Because they're taking people and they're bringing them from other countries and they're exploiting them for cheap labor.
That is very well. Let me ask you something. Do you support like the guest workers program? Because one of the other sides to it is, you know, living on the border. When I was growing up, we had 22 ranches or farms, you know, chilies and cotton and all that stuff. I know that my son is not going to go and pick cantaloupes in Yuma or chili peppers. And if we don't have that kind of labor, you know, a lot of these community, a lot of these farmers and ranchers go out of business. I mean, do you support that at all?
Absolutely not, because the same thing has happened in the black community. We almost have obliterated the black farmer for those same very reasons. And the ways to make an honest living have been absolutely taken away from our communities, because what they've done is they have reduced and suppressed and depressed the wages toward a point where individuals cannot make, it's not a living wage, and they're exploiting the non-citizen population to make that happen. But it's, the bottom line is it goes back to corporate greed. So it impacts us for generations, as you've just said. My family is from the South. My father was, and mother, both from Louisiana. They were, my mother was a sharecropper. My father was a pick cotton. And those were honorable at one time. They were the only jobs we had. But what happened was that they didn't want to pay fair wages. And once people started requesting to be paid and compensated in a fair and fair wages, then they said, well, then we'll take these jobs away from you and give it to someone else who's willing to work for basically nothing.
Well, you know, I've read this article, this argument that you put forth on the White House blog, Ms. Lewis, and that's actually one of the reasons that I invited you. Ms. Lewis and I both subscribe to this blog at the White House, and I noticed some of the things that you said, and I got to tell you, I was surprised by some of them. But even more surprising was that 162 people wrote in and said that they liked what you had to say, and you generated over 9,000 comments, which leads me to believe that you have a very important perspective that's shared by many people. But I've got to tell you, it sounds a lot to me like the same old, same old. I mean, I know that you talk about the expropriated labor of African Americans, and surely that's a part of our history, and it's not something that we should be proud of, but we know it exists. But isn't this what isn't this capitalist? It seems to me that you have somewhat of a socialist perspective. I mean, Karl Marx would have told us that capitalism only exists on the expropriated labor of the working class. So how is this different? Why is this a problem of immigration and not a problem of big business?
Well, the first thing you've done is use the wrong word. This is not a problem of immigration. We have immigration laws in place. This is a problem of people coming here illegally. They are not using the system as it's supposed to be. We have people that have come here the right way. And what you've done is you've literally taken the rights away from U.S. citizens. We're talking about citizenship. So what they've done is they take these words and they try to make it sound like people are coming against other people, but it's not. If I come to your home and I say, you know what, he has a nice house. It's a lot nicer than mine. What I think I'm going to do is I'm going to take my family and we're going to pack up and I'm going to break in and move into the house. And once I'm there and you come home and see me there, then I'm going to tell you, you can't tell me to leave because you have a better life than I have where I was living. And what they're doing is they broke the law. And what our country has done is we have picked and taken the choice of picking and choosing what we say is legal and illegal, even though they're all illegal. You're putting a price on one or the other. You're picking winners and losers. The key is you're saying immigration, legal immigration versus illegal immigration. Illegal immigration is a crime. So when you begin to, you're really watering down, number one, the laws. And why do we even have laws? Why do we even create laws? Because you're allowing some people to break the laws and get away with it. Where, why don't you go ahead and give amnesty to the people who are thieving and stealing because they don't have enough to eat or because they can't find a job because our unemployment rates in the black community have been so high? Why don't you give them amnesty? Why are you picking and choosing? If you're going to have a law, enforce it across the board, and that's what laws are for, enforcement. So when you take these words and you try to make it sound like these are just, you're picking on these people. No, we're not. We're saying follow the law. Let's uphold the Constitution. We have taken the Constitution, dug a hole and thrown it in it and buried it. We don't even have the right to live in America, the right to liberty, the right to work in America. It's been stripped away from us by our very own government.
Well, it's interesting because I had this conversation with Gus, who I know very well, last weekend, and he's, you know, CEO and president of the Hispanic Institute, in that I have a lot of people I knew who did it the legal way, which is, you know, for 14 years, you got to stay in this country. You can't go to your grandmother's funeral. You can't go to your grandchild or your cousin's wedding. You have to stay here and you have to do it by the law. And they are very, very adamant and very upset that they did it legally. And yet, you know, you don't hear anything about this group of people. You don't, they don't get any praise. They don't get any kind of, they don't get interviewed about what they feel, how they feel about this whole thing, giving amnesty to people who have done it illegal, cross back and forth. I mean, I do agree with you. I think that there is a legal process. And if you go anywhere else in the world, and in fact, if you go into Mexico illegally, they have really, really very strict laws. They throw you in prison. You cannot enter Mexico illegally. So I do find that that argument, you know, people don't really look. The media doesn't look at that side of the issue. Do you agree with me?
Absolutely. And that's one of the biggest problems. I just returned from Southeast Asia. And same thing. I'm sitting here thinking, how is it that the United States, supposedly the greatest nation in this, on the planet, we can't protect our borders? And so I look at these other countries, and if I try to do that, I may never see the United States again. But yet and still, we allow people to come here. We say, oh, they broke the law, but let's give them all these benefits since they broke the law, and since they broke the law because they were poor. Well, we have people here. We're living in a third world country if you go to many of our communities. So I think that we need to back up and look at the underlying root cause of why we are even having this conversation. The bottom line is, it's all about increasing corporate profits. Because when you look at the arguments that they give for allowing reform and what they're calling reform, what they're really saying, and the corporations are pushing this, they're saying is, we want to further depress wages. Now, if we're in a situation where we have a low demand for skilled workers, then that means you get paid more money. I've been in the Silicon Valley all my life, and I've watched them do this. It started with IBM. It used to be a day when you had a job for life. Then they started laying off the people that were making too much money, and they started saying, well, we're going to have layoffs. And then a few months, 6 months later, then they claim they don't have enough workers, and they start asking them to increase the caps, give us more temporary workers, give us more H-1 visas, give us more. And so it's a game. And if you look at the data and the statistics, the lies that they're telling to justify it and the way that they're exploiting these illegal immigrants is unfortunate, because what happens is it puts us against group, which is unfortunate. But the truth of the matter is, as an American, I have a right, and I want you to uphold my right. I voted for you, so you need to stand for to protect me and not to protect the citizens of other nations.
Well, I agree with you on that. I think that it has always been the modus operandi in this country politically, unfortunately, to put one socially and economically one social economic minority group against another. I think that's always been a problem in America. And I think you're right about the wages too. I think we're fighting right now in our area to increase the minimum wage to a living wage, because if you make minimum wage, if you have two people making minimum wage in the District of Columbia, they can't afford to live here. It's absolutely impossible. So I agree with you on those points. But I ask you, what do we do with the 11 million aliens that we have, undocumented aliens that we have in the United States? Do we give them a pathway to citizenship? And if not, what do we do with them?
I think that's a very good question. Number one, we absolutely do not give them a path to citizenship, and I'll tell you why. If you look at the record that we have, every time we give them a path to citizenship, we double, triple, quadruple the number of them coming back, because it's an incentive for them to continue. I think this is a long, hard look that we need to take from an internal perspective and look at what other countries that have been successful in protecting their borders have done. Look at Canada. Canada doesn't allow them to do that. We need to take a look at these countries that have been successful, and we need to duplicate those models. Number one, if I come in and I break into your home and you give me a warm jacket and you give me food, I'm going to keep coming back like a cat that you're feeding on your porch. What we're doing is we are giving people incentive. We're giving them jobs. We're giving them driver's license. We're giving their kids scholarships. We're allowing their kids to go to school with our kids. We're changing the very essence of what America is for people who have broken the law. They've literally broken an entry, come into our country, and staked the claim to all the rights that I have, that my ancestors died and were hung hung for and that hung on trees and gave their lives for me to have, but my children won't have that opportunity because my government is busy giving it away to people who have not earned that right.
Well, you know, let me, what do you think about the children who, you know, kind of were born over here? You know, the parents came over illegally. They were born here. They realize what an opportunity they have, and they serve in the military. They feel very patriotic. And sometimes I have encountered these kids that are much more patriotic than ones that have been born here with, you know, fourth, fifth generation. Do you think after serving in the military to protect our country and maybe having such a feeling of patriotic, you know, they will do anything, they will die for this country, that we should deport them?
I think they need to follow the law and follow the process if they want to become citizens. I don't think we should make bend the rules for anybody. When you bend the rule for one, then the next person is going to want the rule bent. And I think we need to go back to the original intent of the U.S. Constitution. We need to look at what the Constitution was originally intent, the original intent, and not what every time we get a new Supreme Court justice or a new leadership in place and how they interpret it. We need to go back to the foundations of what this country was built on because we've lost it. So I do feel sorry for those individuals. However, the law is the law is the law. In the same way as if I brought my children into your home and now they're there and they're cleaning up for you, does that mean they get to stay permanently? No. You have to do things the right way. I mean, it's unfortunate that their parents broke the law. If I break the law and my children are benefiting from it, should that mean that they continue to benefit? Absolutely not. They have to follow the process just like everyone else. Why should they get a special get-out-of-jail-free card when the rest of us are busting our tails and going for generations and generations and generations without, and just because someone decides that they want to grant an amnesty, they get a free card? What about the people that have been here for hundreds of years and still not gotten any amnesty?
Well, you know, I mean, first of all, we are a country of immigrants for the most part. I mean, there are certainly exceptions to that rule. African Americans, to a large extent, were brought over here in chains against their will. So they're certainly an exception to that rule. But for the most part, we are a country of immigrants, and people are coming over today the way they've always come over. What do you say? People that are born in the United States of illegal parents are American citizens. They are following the law. To be born in the United States makes you an American citizen, and it makes you an American citizen under the Constitution. So what do we do? Do we take children that came over here at 1 and 2 years old and deport them because they weren't born here?
No, we need to go back. You need to go back and look at what the originators of the Constitution said. They said that being born on this land does not make you a U.S. citizen. That happened after the fact. If you look at what they're claiming, the 14th Amendment rights, if you look at what the founders and the drafters of the U.S. Constitution said and the Slaughterhouse case, the 1800 Slaughterhouse case, they said that the 14th Amendment is only meant for freed slaves. That means the blacks. They meant 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendment. And what's happened? We have corporations claiming personhoods. We have all these groups that are claiming the rights and the benefits that have never been given to those that it was originally intended for. So when you say that birthright citizenship, that's because they twisted the Constitution. If you go back and look, and I can send you the direct links where you can see the actual text from where they were on the floor and they were debating this, and the original writers of the Constitution said, if your parents are not legal citizens, you don't get birthright citizenship. That's why we have people crossing the border to have their babies. That is a bona fide part of what this country has done to twist and take away our rights under the Constitution. That was not written into the Constitution. And you can read it for yourself, but they try to trick us into believing birthright citizenship. That's not what the Constitution's original intent was for our country.
Well, the court has interpreted that differently, Ms. Lewis. We both know that over the years since the 14th Amendment, the Equal Protection Clause under the Constitution has been extended to all groups and not just African Americans. And I would say to you that the intent of the framers, while it's not unimportant, is certainly not the gospel either. Let's not forget that the men that formed this country didn't want you to vote, didn't want you to vote as a woman, didn't want you to vote as an African American, didn't want Native Americans to vote, didn't want people that didn't own property to vote, didn't want people under the age of 21 to vote. So what the framers' intent was and how it's been interpreted over the courts, that's really the beauty of our system, isn't it? That it evolved. It has evolved over time. But so I'm not so hung up on what the original intent of the 14th Amendment was. I think that it's clear now that the 14th Amendment provides equal protection for everybody.
Well, that's an interesting, it's kind of very interesting what you brought up, Michael, because surely if we did follow it to the Constitution, and we had a member for the Constitution Party whose their basis right. of their party is to go by how the Constitution is actually was written at that time. And that's that right. would definitely mean that women would not vote, people who didn't own property and stuff. So it's one of those things, you know, where it's kind of a tug of war thing. I'd like to ask you, Mrs. Lewis, you know, being from in California, Southern California, and I'm in Southern Arizona, you know, there's also the argument that this belonged to Mexico or to Spain, to Mexico before the United States, but I guess they legally bought it, the Gadsden Purchase. So I don't know if there's this movement in California, as there is in Arizona, where they actually want the southern part of Arizona and the southern part of California to secede from the United States and become, I forget what they call it, but they have a name for it. Have you heard about that in California?
Yes, but the price that we paid was way more than the land was worth. It was bought and it was sold freely by Mexico to this sure. country, and so that argument is not valid, in my opinion. It's not right. valid at all. If we want to talk about what we need to look at is how the actual system has failed and has been, if you look historically at all of the things that have happened, everything that has happened does not have any benefit for the citizens or even for the illegal immigrants. It benefits the corporations. The bottom line is whatever's going to make the rich richer, and if you look at the statistics, it's ironic that our government is now talking about the wealth gap and how the poor are getting poorer. Well, what they're doing is they're bringing a more opportunity for us to become poorer because the middle class was created after World War II. It was created by programs that were developed to help establish, and we created the middle class. But guess what? During that same period, immigration was restricted. So they knew and understood that if you bring people in, you're going to displace American workers. But somehow that fact has been overlooked, and they want to try to pretend like they're trying to help those who need help. But they're not helping us because all they're doing is they're coming up with new schemes to make the corporations richer and to try to make people feel guilty about saying that we want to have true reform. We want you to, first thing you need to do, how can you go 10 times and have immigration reform and you can't secure our borders? You're the greatest country in the world, but you can't secure your borders? That's a lie. They can secure the borders. They have so much technology available, they don't want to secure the borders. The other fact is that they try to make you believe that all of these immigrants are coming from Mexico when the greatest percentage are coming from India. And if you look and see who's getting the majority of the H-1B visas, it is the top Indian companies, Infosys being number two. And they were just recently sued for their illegal want ads, L1, L2, H-1B visas. Basically, they're putting out job postings that say Americans need not apply. Why? Because they are depressing the wages and they're paying them $20,000 to $30,000 a year less than they are paying American workers. It's all about the bottom line is it's all about money. So all these things that they're using to divert us and distract us and take us away from the bottom line, it's about money. And what their goal is to impoverish the American people, to make us dependent on the government so that if you were to go out and get a job as a farmer or get a job working in the field, you'd make more money on disability or unemployment or food stamps or welfare. So why would you waste your time working hard when you can get more money living off the government, becoming dependent?
So how do we develop a policy, Ms. Lewis, that goes after the corporations and not after the immigrants per se? You know, I agree with you 100%. I live in Washington, D.C., where in the African-American neighborhoods in Washington, D.C., we have unemployment of 30% plus. In the white neighborhoods, we have unemployment of 8%. So certainly our economic policies have had a desperate impact on African Americans and other people, I would say, that are socially disadvantaged. So how do we create a policy where we go after the corporations who you say are behind this instead of going after the immigrants?
One, we eliminate the loopholes and we force them to pay the wages. Don't give them all the loopholes. Right now, they're given the loopholes, and they say, we're paying the minimum wage. And with all the loopholes, basically that means it's slave labor. We've had individuals, and I've had different protests that I've launched initially years ago when I would speak, and I would be speaking to some of the white men that would be coming around, and I would say, you could be the next one in the unemployment line, because what was happening was we were being forced to train our replacements. And a couple years later, I started getting calls from white men across the country saying the same thing happened to me. So I kept telling people that this is not a racial issue, which it impacts us more, absolutely, but I'm saying that this is an American citizen issue. So what we need to do in order to correct it is, number one, take away the loopholes that allows the corporations to underpay these people. If you make them pay them the real wages that American labor would be paid, that would disincentivize them from doing that, because it really isn't. It's more expensive for them in the long run. It's cheaper for them in the short run, but it's more costly in the long run for them. Two, if they're going to go and lay off, if you look at the trends and they see these data trends where you'll see IBM and these major corporations, Microsoft, lay off thousands of people, and then 3 months to 6 months later, they're requesting 5,000 more immigrants coming over to work, then those trends need to be called out, and they need to be really fined, not these little slap on the wrist that they're giving. The only way to change it is to hit them in the pocketbook, because that's what's happening. If you look at what's happening, wages have been depressed, and corporate profits have gone up higher than in the history of this country.
Well, that's very, very true. I definitely agree with you along that. And I know out there in our listeners would like to have we'd love to hear from you, actually. I know you guys have comments and are thinking about what Mrs. Lewis have, and I know there's a lot that agree, so please call us at 888-429-5471.
Before we take a short break, we're going to take a short break so everybody can catch their breath and play a song by Ray Stevens, which I think says a lot of the same things that Miss Lewis is saying. But before we do that, I don't know if you caught this in Miss Lewis's bio, but one thing that she does is she works, she's the executive director of the Northern California chapter of Elite Services Disability Veterans Network, which I understand helps disabled American veterans with business. And I want to commend you for that, Miss Lewis. I'm a big supporter of veterans here in the Washington area. I'm proud to say that I just received an award from the local VFW for my work with veterans and their families. So thank you very much for doing that. And I got to tell you, after talking to you, I have a different attitude than I had to begin with. I think you're right about the corporate angle of this. And I think that we really do need to close some of these loopholes. And after we come back from the break, that's what I'd like to talk about. So here's a song from Ray Stevens called Come to the USA. We'll be back in a minute.
Hello, this is the IIAP, the Illegal Immigration Assistance Program, a taxpayer-funded division of OTNUT for Spanish Press 1, Portuguese 2, Arabic 3, Farsi 4, French 5, Swahili 6, German 7, Italian 8, and if you insist on English, please stand by. If you're thinking about illegal immigration, be careful when you're choosing the nation, because breaking the law in some countries is frowned upon.
And we're back with Yolanda Lewis, who's a businesswoman from California, an organizer, an advocate, and an advisor on the White House Council of African American Leadership. We're talking about immigration, and we want to talk about how we can improve our immigration policy and come up with reasonable immigration policy that not only serves the people that are involved, but serves America, serves our country, makes it stronger and greater. One thing that I read on the blog, Miss Lewis, was about hospitals. This is a problem. Mm-hmm. Now, Kathleen will tell you she worked at a hospital near the border that went bankrupt because of all the care that they had to provide to undocumented who couldn't pay. And Medicaid wouldn't reimburse the hospital. Am I right, Kathleen?
Well,
because
that,
they weren't citizens?
Well, not only that, but two, you know, the Immigration Border Patrol owed the hospital, I think it was almost $800,000, because when they catch the immigrants, undocumented workers, however you want to call them, they're usually, you know, being brought over by the human traffickers. So they're suffering from dehydration. Some have had broken legs. There's been rollovers in vans and off. So they would bring these people into the hospital and we have to take care of them. And so there's agreement that if they're under the protection of the Border Patrol has them, that they will then reimburse the hospital. Well, the hospital, it was $800,000. So to a small rural hospital on the border who not only is facing that issue, but is also having people come across the border to have their babies born, and we don't even have the ability really we don't have like what they call it, a place to have babies born, but they would be born in the emergency room. You know, it's an added cost, and it's so expensive for this hospital, and we had so many uninsured children, and you know, you can't turn them away. So the hospital is definitely in bankruptcy, and it's such an important facet to that community's welfare, because we're 2 hours away from a major city, and we have a high diabetic rate of those that live on the border, and it's just one thing after another. And you know, how are you going to have a community grow and bring industry when you don't even have a hospital that can keep its doors open? So it's interesting when Michael talked to me about the fact that you brought up that issue. Nobody talks about those things, and that's what impacts rural communities along the border and probably even in places like North Dakota or you know, Missouri.
Well, I think it affects us across the nation, but I don't think that they really specify or point out where it actually hits us. And it goes bigger than just with the hospitals. It goes to the schools. In California, we had several measures that the taxpayers actually voted to increase our taxes because our schools were dilapidated. Our hospitals, we had the same problem. Everything was going down. Why? Because we have to support anyone that comes here. It doesn't matter if you're a citizen or not. It doesn't matter if you broke the law to come here or if your parents broke the law to come here. The taxpayers are suffering, and then therefore the community suffer because we have overcrowding in our schools. I had to take my son out of the public school system and pay for him to go to school, so I'm paying twice. And so I think it's unfortunate, because if you look at the bigger picture of what we're doing, is we are forcing Americans to pay for the other countries' inability to take care of their citizens, and it's not fair. It's not fair. It impacts us. It impacts our quality of life. I just took my father to the hospital, and he had to pay over $7,000 to go to the doctor. And you know, what should I have done? Taken him to emergency and just not paid the bill? No, that's not what we're made of, or that's not what we're built around. We need to make sure that we can take care of our own before we start trying to take care of outsiders. I mean, that's just a fundamental rule of life. You can't take care of others unless you're taking care of your own self. And what's happening is, especially in rural areas, if you look at what's happening, if you shut down the hospital, that means people may not make it. And is that something that we should take on the responsibility, because we have taxed ourselves by taking on the responsibility of taking care of these others and overtaxing our system from a financial perspective? Is it fair? Is it right? Do we even have a voice? We don't even have a voice. They do it. We have to pay the consequences. And then we find out what the actions of our leaders and our elected officials have done and taken and how that impacts us years later. So they're not the ones suffering. We are.
And just to follow up on that point is that when you don't have a hospital and when you have overcrowded schools and you're in a little town on the border, no industry is going to come in. Because what is the first thing people look for? Good schools and good hospitals. And yeah, if you don't have that to offer, your town dies. And so, you know, it's amazing how this is all interconnected. And those policymakers in D.C. just don't – maybe they do get it and they just don't care. But I don't think they understand all the consequences. It's like, you know, just a constant string of hits, you know, when you think of how it impacts us.
And look at their net worth. I've done some research to look at almost all of our elected officials. The majority of them are very wealthy. They can't relate to what we're going through. They're part of the 1% group. So how could they ever relate? And besides that, you have the powerful money of the, that's going into lobbying. And if you really look at who's really fighting for this, it's a very small percentage that have the big money that is able to put the money out. And those of us who are against it don't have the huge pocketbooks to support it. So it's about money at the end of the day. They don't. I'd like for them to come down and live and for a week. Let them stay there for a week and see the difference and see if their perspectives change. Right now, they can't relate because they've never had to live that. They can't relate because they've never been impoverished. They can't relate because they've never had to want or need any for anything. They've never had to go. They don't have to go to the hospitals like we do. They don't have to, you know, their children don't have to go to the public schools like ours do.
Well, you know, I'm not sure that I totally agree with that in the sense that I know plenty of politicians that have grown up in impoverished backgrounds. But I will tell you that you have a political problem, and this is something that we're going to need to deal with. You know, it's funny that you should say that we have to take care of ourselves before we can take care of others, because I wrote a letter to the newspaper, which I believe will be published in the next few days. In the District of Columbia, the city council has put forth legislation that would allow people with green cards to vote in city elections. Mm-hmm. Now, this is illegal in every state in the United States, and there's a federal law that prohibits people with green cards from voting in elections. And, of course, voting is central to citizenship, but it's an election year. There are 11 people running for mayor. They all want to pander to a growing Hispanic community, so they put forth legislation like this. And this is a reality that we're going to have to deal with. Republicans and Democrats are going to be going after Hispanics in 2016. So there's political pressure as well as the pressure from the corporations that you're talking about to do this. We're going to have to deal with this. How do we get around that?
I think the first step is what you're doing today, is actually putting it out there and making the information available. So often we only get a one-sided perspective, like you said, and it's usually to the far, far, far extreme of each perspective. And yes, I think that people need to begin to step back and start looking at the long-term impacts that it's going to have on us. Because I keep seeing the politicians do these little tricks that they're doing that are there. It benefits them today, but what about when they're not the majority, or what about when they're not the ones that have the big, powerful stick? That means that these things are further taking our political system and our system of so-called justice down the garbage can, literally. And in the future, I mean, everything's deteriorating. It's sad. I'm looking at our country and watching it fold before our very eyes. I mean, look, other countries are laughing at us, looking at us when we just had the recent debacle with our the fiscal cliff and the debt ceiling, and I mean we're becoming a laughing stock, because it's all about the self interest of the individuals rather than the greater good of we the people. That's been taken away from the United States. We're no longer united.
Well, I agree with that, and I would say that you can probably relate to this as someone who's a businesswoman. But I ran my own business for 25 years, and I had a quote over my desk by John Kenneth Galbraith that said, in the long run, we're all dead. And that's the mantra of small business, is it not? You know, you're always worrying about the next payroll and the next time period. And you know, it's only very large businesses that really get to worry about the future. Those of us in small business always have to worry about the present. And I think that's very true of politicians. I don't think they give a damn what happens after the next election cycle. I think they only focus on the next election cycle. So I think that you're right. I don't know how we get back this sense. I generally call it being an American. When I was growing up, I think there was a national identity that we all had, that there were certain things that we all agreed on. And I see that going away day by day. I think you're right. I think that we're less concerned about our country and the prospects for the future than we are about the immediate. But I don't know what we do about that.
Well, let me just say, let me bring another point into this, and I think, Ms. Lewis, you're going to agree with me. When I came back to Arizona, I was shocked at the corruption in the voting system. Now, Michael and I have had people, and he disagrees with me, because what I saw happen was, with his voter absentee ballots, what I saw the Democrats do to get the votes was to basically just, you know, you have people sign in, you know, you've got six people that live in this little house that no one's lived in for 20 years, and they've got all kinds of names, and you get the ballots, they get sent to the address, you pick them up, and then you vote and you send it out. And I mean, that is how I feel the Democrats in where I've grown up, and I remember, you know, the vote was such an important thing. It was part of being a citizenship. And now it's just being kind of something that's a fraud to get the votes and get the Hispanics to get elected. I mean, I see it so much in the Hispanic communities that I've seen where they trust these people. They say, well, you know, you don't have to go to the polls. You know, we'll send it in for you, and you call me, and I'll come, and I'll fill it out for you. And they don't read English. You know, they haven't learned the language, and so they trust these people, and these people get these. I mean, do you see that happening in California too?
Absolutely, and even to a further extent, we had them actually going and taking the ballots out of the mailboxes in the Black community because they assumed that, although it was proven statistically, most of them did, that they were going to vote for the Democrats. They were literally taking them, and they were finding them down in the gutters and the sewage down the block. People were taking them out of the mailboxes so that they didn't get submitted. People would put it in their mailbox, put their flag up, and people would go and take them and throw them away. So, yeah, wow. Absolutely. Corruption is the biggest problem that we have in this country, and the majority of the people are oblivious to it, and it's time for more information to be put out. Like what you're doing today is a great thing, because what you're doing is you're giving people more of a broader perspective and forcing them to think, and also go and research it for yourself. Don't listen to an individual. Take it. Right. Take the time out to look for the information. Find out the facts. Because this is not only, if you don't care about today, and you're right, everything is about now, today. And it's, everything is so corrupt, they don't think about the next generation. What about the next generation? They've already said that when a baby is born in the United States, they automatically have a debt of $55,000. If we can't get a job because they're displacing us, or if the wages have been suppressed so far, and if, to go to college, I have a cousin who's going to college back east, and she's going to have, when she's done, a couple $100,000 in student loans. And how is she going to pay that off? Will she ever buy a home? I don't know. Will she be able to get a job? I don't know. I mean, it's a pretty depressing future when you look at what they're creating. But the majority of Americans, like you said, don't pay attention or look at what is the true state of we the people. It doesn't exist anymore. Our legal system and our political leadership have corrupted it to the point where it's almost a thing of yesterday and no hope for tomorrow.
Well, now you've depressed both of us because we both have kids. We both have kids in college, and yes, that you're just—it's unbelievable, Ms. Lewis. My daughter—I have a daughter and a son who are both in college, and Kathleen has a son in college. But my 1 year of my daughter's college education costs more than my bachelor's degree and my master's degree combined. It's incredible. And if you don't have parents that are well-heeled enough to pick up most of it or all of it, you start off life in a really bad position. And you're also right about the voter fraud. It's been going on forever. In African American communities, it's been especially bad over the years. I have some experience of that as a Democrat, and I've also done poll watching on reservations during elections. And yeah, it's just incredible how much corruption, when you really start to look, how much corruption there really is in the voting system.
Okay, let me just add this. You know how I'm very passionate about this, because the voter absentee ballot is something that's very unique and very different. It wasn't around maybe 20, 15 years ago. It's kind of a new kind of way of turning around. There was a local election in my town of Douglas where, you know, all of a sudden this guy won by 700 votes. But guess how he won? By voter absentee ballots. He didn't win at the polls where people went and voted and you could watch him. It was by, and that just to me doesn't make any sense. And when, let me go back to the college. We did a show, and you, I think, on your blog mentioned what was the woman, the senator who's trying to help college students by
Elizabeth
Warren.
Elizabeth Warren.
It amazes me that we can't give to our students the same rate that we loan to banks, which is like, what, 0.1% or something like that?
1%.
We should give our college students that same benefit. I know in the small junior college in my right outside my town, they are actually offering scholarships, or I forget if it's tuition to up. I mean, they need supposedly the kids to come there, but they're offering it to people from Mexico. You know, those scholarships that I still think could be going to the kids that live on this side of the border.
Okay, well, so UC Berkeley is doing the same thing. They have a special scholarship for illegal immigrant children. So it's non-citizens, and those, I mean, I can go back and look at the calendar where I looked at the, they didn't have a single black male admitted into UC Berkeley, but they're giving scholarships to people who don't even have citizenship. It's so unfair. But then again, how do we get around that? Why are do we allow them to do that? Why is it in California that in the city of Oakland they're giving ID cards so that they could make it easier for them to participate and to continue in their illegal activities? Why is it that they're thinking of giving licenses, driver's licenses, to make it easier for them to get around in order to continue breaking the law? Why is it that there is no enforcement of the laws? Why is it that ICE has been told not to enforce? Why is it that people are being released? I mean, if you look at some of the data, there's a lawsuit that came out from some of the actual leadership in the Department of Homeland Security because of the fact that they're being told not to enforce the law. I mean, it's crazy what they're doing, and it doesn't make any sense because what they're doing is they're putting us at risk from a financial, from a safety. Anyone could come from that. If I'm going to be doing something that I want to get away with, I'm going to find your weakness, and right now that's a huge weakness.
Well, you know, I would say, though, that one of the things that we have to do, and we certainly have dealt with this in Washington, D.C., where we just issued, we just passed a law to issue to undocumented aliens driver's licenses. The theory behind it, of course, is that they need to be insured and they need to be tested, and we need to, you know, it makes us safer to have them license, and I believe that's true. And it's true about taxes too. When these people are being paid under the table, we're losing billions. I think it was estimated by the Bureau of Labor Statistics that we lose over $11 billion a year in federal taxes that are uncollected because these people are being paid under the table. So if any reform that we do in immigration has to include some strong policy that allows us to tax these people and keep track of them. What do you think about that?
I think if you take a look at the difference between the wages and you gave that those wages to the American workers, we'd collect more taxes from the people that are here. I mean, that's, to me, I think that's a way to circumvent the truth and the underlying issue. The amount of money that the American people, I have a man who's darn near a rocket scientist who's over 50, and he just had a temporary assignment, but he can't find a job. It's not that he's under qualified. He's qualified, but they don't want to pay him. They want to pay him slave wages. So if we took all of these thousands and thousands, hundreds of thousands of millions, I'm sorry, millions of Americans who are not working and paid them fair wages, the taxes would be increased. So to use that as an excuse, we'd get a lot more taxes by paying people what they're really worth than to continue underpaying other people from other countries. We'd get a whole lot more in taxes.
Because that is an argument they use. I mean, Gus was saying last week that, I don't know, can't remember the statistic, that if you gave them citizenship, we would increase our, you know, our tax coffers by billions and billions, because now these people would be paying taxes and they wouldn't be afraid and of being deported, and so they would contribute much more to the society. But you're right, it's usually people who are being paid below the minimum wage.
Right. And so then you look at what's happening now. We have fast food workers that are lobbying and fighting for more money. You have people telling the federal government to increase the federal minimum wage. And as a small business owner, I absolutely want to have people supported so that they have a living wage. But where am I supposed to get the extra money to pay? Where am I supposed to get the extra money to pay for health care insurance for people? Am I supposed to have a magic wand or a special printer that I can print the money? Because I'm not able to go back and overcharge my customers because already as a small business, they say small businesses aren't able to compete with the big guys, the Boeings and the IBMs and the Raytheons. So then as a small business, I'm forced to continually cut my profits and try to maximize efficiencies to reduce my costs. So where are we to get the money to pay? Where are we to get the money to pay for increased labor? There's a missing gap here. These policymakers don't look at what's really impacting and how it impacts us. Here in San Jose and Northern California, they raise the minimum wage, and all these restaurants, they have very, very tight budgets, profit margins, and when they force them to raise their minimum wage, that means they had to raise the prices for the customers, which meant that a lot of these people don't have jobs and they can't continue coming to the restaurant. So we have depressed sales, and now they're having to lay people off. And then when you see the offset of what happened with the health care reform, people start laying off people or reducing their hours because they couldn't afford to pay it. No, they don't look at the whole picture. They just look at these little segments and say, oh, yeah, let's do this and let's make this change. But they don't look at how it's going to impact everyone that's in that cycle.
And I really commend you and Ms. Lewis, for what you're saying, because I know you must not be one of the most popular with your viewpoint. And I have to give Michael, Senator Brown, I have to commend you for writing that article, because I know you're not going to be very popular within that city council.
Well, I'm not now.
You're not anyway, right?
Yeah, I'm not anyway.
And I think it's people like us that have to be asking these questions. And, you know, for me, I have, you know, a lot of people in the Mexican community who are going to be totally horrified that I feel the way I do because, you know, things have changed. And I think that's what people don't understand. There was a time my grandfather in 1928, he was over here and he got amnesty. But, man, he believed in the system and he fought very hard and he supported people. And, you know, and that was a time for then. And now when you talked about the border, people don't understand that it's not just Mexicans coming over. In the three-mile radius of Douglas, I think this was a year ago, there were 4,000 that were caught that were Russians, Chinese, Pakistanians, Indians. I mean, it's a different world, and we have to think of it that way. We can't necessarily accept all the poor that is in the world to our shores anymore. I mean, we have to think about keeping America was what it is because we had a middle class, and I definitely, as part of the middle class and looking for a job, I know exactly what you're talking about. It's very difficult to find a good-paying job in America these days.
And think about our veterans. I mean, we're about to have a larger influx of veterans coming back with the ending of the war. And our veterans, if you go back and look, after World War II, where the programs, the GI programs, GI bills, the veterans were the responsible largely for the creation of the middle class. And now they're being displaced. And look at the suicide rate of how we have veterans committing suicide every day because, one, we don't have jobs for them when they come out. Two, they're not being properly acclimated back into our communities. And they didn't choose, made a decision, a conscious effort to go and stand in for us to have freedom so that we could be the greatest nation on this earth, but they're being displaced and no one talks about that.
Well, you know what? I've got to absolutely agree with you on that too. One out of every three homeless people in the District of Columbia is a veteran, and that's a disgrace. There should be no such thing as a homeless veteran. And you're right about creating the middle class. The GI Bill educated veterans and provided opportunities for them, and they turned around and built the greatest middle class the world has ever known. So again, we're in agreement, and I got to tell you, we're just about.
We're just about out of time here.
But I've got to tell you, the thing that surprised me, I said this earlier when I invited you on the show, was not really the way you felt, but the way you felt as obviously somebody that has input into the liberal establishment here in Washington, because we always hear these two polarized views that you pointed out earlier, and we generally don't hear from people that want to talk about change, but want to talk about reasonable change and want to talk about something other than the 10-second soundbite. So let me say thank you so much for coming on today and sharing your perspective with us. Ms. Lewis. I hope that you will come back as we get further on down the road, and maybe we'll come up with some reasonable solutions to some of these problems. I think that now that we've talked, I think we have more in common than we have at that we're at odds about. So that's the idea of the show, to bring people together. And thank you for helping us with that. Kathleen, anything you want to say?
I just think it's got to be the Holy Spirit, because I can't believe you agreed more than you disagreed, Mr. Senator Brown there. And I don't know. I mean, I think this is exactly, it's exciting, because having Ms. Lewis, you know, at first we were like, you know, kind of hesitant. But, you know, we have so much more in common than we do not in common. And I think that's what we got to realize in America. America's got to start talking to each other.
Yes, I appreciate what you guys have done, and I look forward to bringing solutions, because I'm one that believes if you are part of the complaint process, you're a part of the problem. But if we can work together for some solutions that work for everyone, then we all win.
And you know what, Kathleen? Part of this is that you think that I don't agree with women. It's not true. I just don't agree with you. But I do. But there are plenty of women in the world I agree with. Well, thanks again, Ms. Lewis. Thanks, America, for listening. I wish a few of you had called in today, because I think this is an interesting discussion. But I promise you, if Ms. Lewis is amenable to it, we will certainly have her back again, and maybe not so close to the holidays when everybody's so busy, and maybe we will generate some more discussion. So,
and again, just before we go, I'm sorry, we need to thank iTunes and Stitcher and the Fall River Community Radio for having our show on, being able to download on those iTunes, Stitcher, and then again, Fall River Community Radio. Thanks very much to those organizations.
And thank you again, Ms. Lewis, and we wish you the happiest holiday for you and your family, and we hope to talk to you again soon.
Thank you. Looking forward to it.
Okay. Bye-bye. Thank you, America. We'll see you next week. Give the people their right to vote.